Great. Thank you very much. Our next question comes from a caller.
Yes, I have a three-part question also, which is, first of all, with respect to the slavery dispute that seemed to be promulgated by an anonymous flyer, I ultimately read a copy of that flyer on Vision 2020, and several people asked, what's the defamatory, untruthful part of that flyer? And I never got an answer, so I'd be curious to hear Pastor Wilson's answer to that. And then it seemed that in his most recent column, he then said that this issue was never about slavery. It was about homosexuality. And I didn't understand how we got there, and I'd like an explanation of that. And since we did get there, what are we going to do about homosexuality if the church continues to grow? Is there an agenda with respect to homosexuality? I'll hang up and listen.
All right. I'll try and touch these pretty quick. I think I can answer these questions pretty quickly. What was the lie or what was false or defamatory about the anonymous poster that was circulated downtown? Well, what happened there was certain quotes were taken out of the booklet that I and Steve Wilkins had written. A picture of me was on the poster, and then these quotes were displayed, and it was come meet the authors with the dates of the history conference given. Everything on the poster was technically true. But it was technically true in the same way that if you went home to your wife and said, I have really good news, hon, the boss came in sober today, that everything you said was true. He always comes in sober. But when you say, in this context, the boss came in sober today, you're implying that he usually doesn't, or he frequently doesn't. The implication of this poster was that the conference was on slavery, which it wasn't. The conference is on revolution and modernity. Nothing to do with slavery. So the newspaper picked up the story, and the implication was picked up in the story that it was on slavery. Then the AP Wire picked up that story, and it was circulated all over the Northwest. And by the time it got down to Boise, I think, it was the U of I sponsoring a conference on slavery. So they got the sponsor wrong, and they got the topic wrong. And all of this came from a very clever way of framing it on the poster. So that was the defamatory lie. But the poster was technically accurate. But you don't want to go around saying that the boss came in sober today, because that's just a way of lying by telling the truth. When I said in the column that this issue is about homosexuality, this is something that we laid out in the booklet in 1996, and this is why nobody thinks that slavery is a positive good like food, air, and sunshine, except for certain folks. In the Sudan, they think it's a positive good, but I certainly don't. I don't think that I don't know anybody that wants to restore slavery or bring it back or take it as a good thing at all. The reason we wrote the booklet in 1996 is a discussion will go something like this. We are about to have homosexual marriages imposed on all 50 states, courtesy of Massachusetts, through the full faith and credit clause of the Constitution. When that happens, there will be debates in all the states, in the churches, in communities, and so forth, about what do we do concerning homosexual marriage. Now, let's say a Christian stands up and expresses his faith that should be we should be able to express in a public venue, and says, I don't believe that we should have homosexual marriage because the Bible prohibits it. In Leviticus and Romans 1, the Bible prohibits it. Then the answer to that, and I've been in these conversations, so I know how it goes, the answer to that is, you can't be appealing to the Bible. The Bible allows for slavery. All right, that's how these two things are joined. You can't appeal to Leviticus. Leviticus prohibits clam chowder. You can't appeal to the Bible because the Bible allows for slavery. We wrote the booklet not because we were interested in promoting slavery, but because we were interested in defending the scriptures as Christians who will be speaking and interacting publicly with others on this. So with regard to what are we going to do now that it's here, as the as the Christian faith grows and spreads, let's say God blesses it, what we would do is we'd proclaim to homosexuals the same thing we proclaim to heterosexuals: the good news of forgiveness for all sin, homosexual sin, heterosexual sin, through Jesus Christ. That's what we do. And that's what Paul tells us to do in Corinthians.
All right, thank you. Bill?
The issue of, I'll try to get to all three of them. The issue of the flyer, it's a remarkable comment that people can lie by telling the truth. And it's the first time I've heard anyone representing Christ Church talk about and recognize that this flyer, which I actually have a copy of in my hand, was correct. It was defined over and over again as totally inaccurate and described as full of lies before on Vision 2020 by members of the Christ Church. I'm glad there's been a recognition that it was actually truthful, because in fact it was. And the reason that, one of the reasons that slavery was brought up in the first article in the Daily News was that Doug Wilson, in his discussion with reporters in the Daily News, had brought that fact out, that yes, indeed, they have spoken about slavery at these sessions. It was a topic in 1996, and at this session, yes, Doug Wilson and Steve Wilkins, the co-authors of the book, will both be there, and yes, there probably will be questions about slavery. So I think it's very accurate to say that, yes, slavery will be part of the conference that was planned for February this year at the U of I. It's very difficult for me to talk about the slavery issue because the target keeps shifting. And if you read the book, which I've done, and by the way, I recommend it to everyone, there's copies, two copies, at the Moscow Public Library. One is at the circulation desk. Then you have to read it there in the building. It's only 40 pages. You'll do it quickly. And the other is one you can check out. Anyway, I suggest that people read the book. If you read the book, you'll read sentences like, "Owning slaves is not an abomination." Or, "The Bible is clear that Christians may own slaves." It's very explicit. It's very precise. The book is a complete and total... The focus of the book completely and totally is that slavery's okay. The Bible says slavery's okay. That's not what we've been hearing recently. I think Doug Wilson was painting himself into a corner, and he didn't have any good way of getting out, and so he started saying, well, actually, slavery is evil. And that's what I really meant the entire time. And now he's saying that the book Southern Slavery as It was actually about homosexuality, when in fact that wasn't the topic of the book at all. And if you're wondering what the topic of the book was, if you're wondering what the book is all about, I think you should read it. It's only 40 pages, and it's at the Moscow Public Library.
All right, thank you. Our next question comes from a caller.
Go ahead, caller.
No caller? Okay. Do we have another question to go by? Or okay. Well, I came ready with questions. How about that? The controversy is centered around a couple of themes since its beginning, and Doug started off talking about the term that he uses, intoleristas, and one of the things that I've seen is this kind of ongoing debate. We do have a call. Maybe we'll get to my question later, but caller, can you please pose your question?
Yes, my question is this. This is Ruth Drollinger, and I became acquainted with Douglas Wilson and the Christ Church through the Logos School, and I had three of my four children there. And what I'd like to know is, since I came out with information of child abuse there, how come I was demonized? How come your people attacked me? How come when I went to your open public forum, you tried to quash what I had to say? I would like to know that. And I would like to know how come if you're so tolerant, how you claim not to be violent, how come you use violence against children? And how come you stress Robert E. Lee through the school? How come you celebrate his birthday? How come you put down children when they bring out what's wrong with Abraham Lincoln? I'd like to know some of these things. How come you punish children for having to go to the bathroom? How come you have these bizarre policies, corporal punishment policies against children? I'd like to know some of those things.
One of the, as with Ruth's presentation of the town hall meeting, and here, there are a whole host of questions. One of the general things I'd like to say is that the Logos School Board, because her concerns and complaints had to do with Logos School, which is not owned or operated by Christchurch. They're separate organizations. The Logos School Board, which I sit on, invited Mr. Ollinger to appear before them twice to present her concerns, and she declined to appear. And we thought that that was the appropriate venue for addressing those questions. One of the things that has become apparent to me in this whole thing is once the signal was given, it seems to me that everybody in the country with a grievance that against anything that we've done for the last 10 years or more, locally, nationally, has sort of come out of the closet and said, all right, here's time to band together and pile on. With regard to a couple of specifics, we do, as a Christian, I believe that the Bible does teach how you're supposed to bring up children in a loving, caring environment, and discipline is part of that. And so, yeah, when we were bringing up our kids, we loved them, we read to them, we played with them, we spanked them when they needed it, and so forth. That is part of a normal, healthy, well-adjusted family. And all the parents who band together at Logos School to educate their children the same, you know, from a common framework, a common worldview set of convictions, know where we're coming from. They're given a parent-student handbook. They sign on to it. Everybody agrees to it. And then, unfortunately, some people develop a grievance later.
Bill?
I don't know where to begin with responding to Ruth's questions. Maybe I'll explain why I did not go to the town hall meeting. First of all, I had a bridge game that night, and everybody knows how hard it is to put together four for a bridge. But the other reason, the real reason, is because I was afraid that something just like what happened there was going to happen. It was an unmoderated discussion, and it was an opportunity for people to speak out. And what happened was that she spoke out, and her microphone was turned out, and she was ushered out of the crowd, out of the hall.
Said the fellow who wasn't there.
Said the fellow who managed to... who read several different articles and spoke with it. At least a half a dozen people who were there. Anyway, my point is, I was only willing to participate in a moderated discussion under specific format for those kinds of reasons. And I understand her concerns.
Okay, we have the next question comes from a caller.
Yes, I'd like to ask Doug Wilson if it's true, as stated in Joe Moorcraft's letter to the editor in last Friday's Daily News, that when he visited what he referred to as Doug's school several years ago, that Confederate flags and memorabilia were being prominently displayed there. I'd appreciate some clarification as to whether that's true, which school is Doug's school, and I'd like the Pastor Wilson to comment on the appropriateness of displaying these memorabilia in a school.
Yeah, part of his comment was true and part of it wasn't. He said in his letter that several years ago when he visited, well, it was many years ago. Number two, it's not Doug's school. I sit on the board, but I'm various churches, numerous three or four different churches are represented on the board, and so the school's not my school. At that time, I don't know if it was 12, 15 years ago. It was quite a number of years ago that Joe Moorcraft was here. I had an office in the school at that time. We'd just moved into that building, and it was my office. It was not a school office. It was not part of the school at all. And in my office, I'm not sure what Joe was pointing to. I've got a couple of bullets from War Between the States. I have to this day. I've got a picture of Jeb Stuart in my office today, and so he's probably talking about things like that. But that was not it was not a War Between the States museum or anything like that. It's just I've got a bunch of stuff in my office, and picture of Jeb Stuart's really cool.
Yep.
There's quite a difference from what Doug just said and what Moorcraft said in his letter. He said when he visited the offices several years ago, the battle flag and pictures of Confederate soldiers were prominently displayed. That's a big difference between that and having a couple of bullets. But anyway, I think that's part of what I have been trying to puzzle out through all of this process. It's since Christchurch is a private organization, they don't print or disseminate what their plans are. Their political agenda is something that you have to try to figure out. So I spent some time trying to connect the dots, trying to figure out the puzzle of what actually are they planning in Moscow. They're certainly not telling us, but any organization that's gone as far as it has over the last 20 years has obviously got a plan. So amongst those puzzle pieces is this rather amazing fascination that Doug seems to have with the Confederates. And that I think that links pretty prominently with the neo-Confederate group. I mean, they share an ideology here that that reinforces my own concerns about their plans for Moscow and making Moscow into a haven for neo-Confederates. There are other parts of the puzzle, of course. There's that statement about being a strategic and feasible site to take from the enemy. There's a decade of collaboration between Wilkins and Wilson. There's the fact that I've learned from this, what I call them the spies, the people within the Christchurch who are very disenchanted by this leadership, who talk to me anonymously, and they don't know any of this stuff. They're really surprised to hear this stuff. And there's, add to that the information of articles that Doug Wilson has written in Credenda Agenda, speaking about the future breakup of the United States and how this country will be balkanized like Yugoslavia was, and with the implications of this area, his home area, being one of those self-sufficient, rather the medieval Protestantism he's talking about being established in that area. But primarily it's also coming from his book Angels in the Architecture. It's a book that he wrote with Doug Jones, an elder from Christchurch, and that book really lays the whole thing out, talking about medieval Protestantism and talking about how the pre-Civil War South was the last example of a true Christian nation here on this earth. When you put all those pieces together, it seems to me it's worrisome. I think there really is a strong linkage with the neo-Confederate movement, and I think the plans include bringing neo-Confederates to Moscow and making Moscow a haven for neo-Confederates. That's the way the dots connect to me. I think the church has a political agenda, and that's, I think, what it is.
Great, thank you.